The Secrets of Star Wars is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
Hi, this is Ashley Eckstein, the voice of Ahsoka Tano from Star Wars, and you're listening to the Secrets of Star Wars podcast. May the Force be with you.
Hello there.
It's a power that Jedi have that lets them control people and make things float.
Impressive. Every word in that sense was wrong.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
That's not how the Force works.
Force is with me, and I am with the Force, and I fear nothing.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
You're listening to The Secrets of Star Wars, where we talk about everything connected to that galaxy far, far away. From movies to books, television shows, and more, we're looking at the deeper themes and meanings found in the Star Wars universe. And today, we are discussing the latest episodes of Season 3 of The Bad Batch, Episodes 9, 10, and 11. So a full night tonight. Woo. Be sure to follow The Secrets of Star Wars. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app or directory of choice, or on the StarQuest YouTube channel. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, on X, where we are at SQPN, or on Instagram, where we are at StarQuest Network. And be sure to get your official Secrets of Star Wars gear at SQPN.com/merch. And tonight, I'm your host, Thomas Salerno, and joining me on the panel is Josh Bigley. Hello, Josh.
Hello, hello.
And Catherine Laffrey. Hello there, Catherine.
Hello.
All right, so let's jump right in, because we have a lot to cover tonight. Our first episode, episode 9 of Season 3, is The Harbinger. And I'll just do a brief recap before we dive in. Omega and Batcher discover a mysterious starship in a cave on Pabu. The ship belongs to Asajj Ventress, who has been sent by Fennec Shand. Ventress agrees to train Omega to discover her M-Count potential. The Batch discovers her identity as a former Separatist assassin, but Omega believes that everyone is capable of change and decides to trust her. In a final demonstration to Omega of Force power, Ventress accidentally summons a giant cephalopod from the ocean depths, and the former Night Sister is able to calm the beast. Before leaving Pabu, Ventress tells the Batch that she thinks Omega's M count is low, but could she in fact be lying? So, what did you guys think of this episode overall? I'm pretty glad that we got to see Ventress. I was sure we were going to see her this episode, and we finally did.
It was great to have her back.
I don't know. I really liked that. Just seeing her not... Having seen her in the Clone Wars and then seeing her progress to how she is now is something I just really enjoyed seeing that in the episode.
I was glad people had tipped me off to the book. I did not know her story after the Clone Wars, so that helped me understand all of that.
And you're talking about Dark Disciple.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've not read that one.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet either, but I just kind of did the Cliff Notes version of recapping what people were saying about it. And it's like, okay, so she's alive. She had a boyfriend who was a Jedi who went bad. But then she saved him, and she's alive somehow. That's all I knew.
Yeah, and this is kind of jumping towards the end, but her kind of last line of the episode, or one of her last lines, was that she still has a few lives left, she said. Yeah. And I wonder what she meant by that, or is that kind of like a nod to the fan community that, yes, we know she's technically supposed to not be alive at this time, but... I don't know what to make of that.
I think it's because the last time that we heard of her, she was dead.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, again, one of those characters that's still around.
Yeah.
Somehow. I think in The Dark Disciple, they described somehow of her remaining.
Yeah.
And she is a Night Sister or former Night Sister, and they have a very interesting relationship with life and death.
Yes. Yes, yes. You'll come back as a green... I've heard it called, for Merrick, a green fart creature. Sorry, everyone.
No, yeah. Yeah.
Thankfully, she's not.
No, yeah. Yeah, now I remember back when she was first introduced as a character way back in the Genndy Tartakovsky shorts, the 2D yes. animated shorts. Where she fights Anakin Skywalker, spoilers, but like the, and then after that, you only ever saw her in the comics a few times. And then, you know, she was a regular in the Clone Wars 3D series when it came out. So it's been interesting to kind of watch the evolution of her character over the decades. And yeah, she's in an interesting spot now where she's, I wouldn't describe her as like a good guy, like yet, maybe. But she's
definitely. Did you notice the shadows in this episode?
Oh,
they did light and dark shadow play through this whole thing. So when you first meet Ventress, she's in the shadows.
Yes.
She slowly almost comes out of the shadow, but not quite. But then when other people didn't know what was going on, they were in the shadow and she had the light. And so it just kept going back and forth between the two. So you don't know where anyone is in this. And it was so great to have Crosshair say, I don't even know whose side you're on. So it was just like perfect. Right.
Which is an interesting line coming from him. Who's always switching sides.
Well, he said his big thing is loyalty, right? So... Mm-hmm. Whose side are you on?
Right.
And the opening of the show. Hello, clouds on Pabu. It's like, what happened to Happy Space Grease?
Oh, yeah.
That made me nervous as soon as it opened and I saw clouds. I'm like, oh, no. There goes the happy little island.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually. Or, you know, like.
Yeah.
Paradise Island gets overthrown, apparently. But yeah, I thought it was interesting to kind of bring Ventress in as the contact for Fennec Shand, who's good because she's not a Jedi, but she knows about the Force. And in fact, like some of the things she said early in this episode, like I really appreciated because like they're definitely trying to address fans' long-standing annoyance with midichlorians as a concept, you know? And she mentions that essentially everyone has M count, but to varying levels. And I noticed she said, those with a high M count, quote-unquote, were believed to be more capable of wielding with the Force.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a nod that it might not necessarily be true. You know what I mean? They're trying to leave it ambiguous enough so that fans who hate midichlorians can still go, see, midichlorians don't matter. They just believe it's tied to Force use or something like that. Which I thought was funny that they acknowledged that. And then soon after that, she says, your blood doesn't make you a Jedi. You have to be trained for that. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was kind of definitely addressing that concern that people had, you know, when the prequels came out, that it's like, oh, it's like your blood makes you a Jedi. And, you know, that put a lot of people off. So I definitely think they're trying to address that finally.
Mm-hmm. I also saw that part as there's more than just being a Jedi and the hero of her background.
Yes.
A Sith assassin. I think that's right. A technical term. But yeah, and now she's sort of in the middle, and it raises the question of, like, how are they going to train, and what's the new doctrine for them going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Like these gray Jedi almost?
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of parallels with Ahsoka and Grogu when we had that episode. It really felt like, okay, so we've got her questioning, and there's, oh my gosh, so many subtle looks in this. So when she first sees the guys with Omega, you got that same feeling of like Ahsoka seeing the bond between Grogu and Mando, where it's like, they're too tight of a family and this should not be split up, because that was, I believe, part of the downfall of the Jedi, was pulling the kids away from their families too soon.
Right. Yeah.
So it was just neat to see all those little things and seeing how sensitive Batcher is to like take off to go get the guys before even seeing Ventress. It was like, okay, you got to go with those little animal instincts, because Batcher's been right 100% so far.
Yeah, they really need to start listening to their dog.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was interesting, too, that Omega was the one, just like all of us fans, jumping to the fact that because they're after her and because of something to do with M count, she must have a high M count. And it's like, no, they never said you had a high M count.
And that she must be a
that,
Jedi.
But we know right. that, yeah. Yeah. I think it's just because of her friend with, what's his name? The Wookiee. Gunji, yes. Because she wanted so much to be like Gunji. Mm-hmm. That it's like, oh, maybe me too. Yay.
Yeah, and they definitely go on in this, you know, episode to basically, and I think the next one too, to explain how like essentially her blood will be useful for transferring M count from a donor to a recipient. They call her blood a binder. So that seems to me, which I feel like that must have been something too, that they were, because like they which is different from Grogu. They wanted him as the donor for whatever
right.
what they were working on. Like,
yeah, they wanted his high M count.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is kind of the same thing. Because if Omega's the binder,
mm-hmm.
then technically speaking, she should be able to take on an increase in M count from someone. So theoretically, she could be a clone Jedi, because she could take on the M count from someone else.
I see, yeah.
Or not necessarily Jedi. Who knows what she'd be trained as.
Mm-hmm.
But then, obviously, they want to just take her blood. They don't want her to be the one to have the increase in M count. They want someone or something else, as we saw in the mysterious room coming up.
Right, yeah, yeah. I like that the guys immediately think to do essentially a background check on Asajj Ventress. They find in Tech's old files that she was a separatist assassin, and they're immediately like on edge. I like how, you know, she uses like I guess her either her heightened natural senses or like force hearing to like hear what they're talking about.
I thought it was really interesting during that scene. So Omega actually found balance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she was in the light, and Asajj was in the light with her. And she's aware of what the guys are discussing. And then when she senses that something's going wrong, the guys are going to turn on me. That's when Omega loses her balance.
Ah, yeah, because like Asajj gives her several like tests. And that first test is basically balance on a slippery rock.
Yeah.
You know, by the ocean. But yeah, I hadn't noticed that. Now that will benefit from rewatch, seeing all those little nuances in the animation. But it's funny when Asajj realizes the guys are kind of getting ready to make their move, she gives Omega a kind of useless test that will send her far away. She's like, go to the very top of the island and get me this rare flower, and then come back, but you've got to run all the way there. And so she gets Omega out of the picture so she can confront the guys.
Mm-hmm.
Which had one of my favorite lines of the episode. I laughed out loud when she says, I wasn't planning on killing you, but you're making it very tempting. And Wrecker says, yeah, we're good like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of good one-liners in this. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're a funny little clone. Yes. Like, awesome. Stop smiling.
Oh, yeah. Well, she says, stop smiling. It's unsettling.
Yeah. Yeah. She's just going along for the ride. Like, this is so awesome.
Yeah. And that's a great thing about Omega. Very little phases her.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She's just like, oh, you know, going on this adventure. It's great. You know, and what also helps her as a character, you know, is that she has this innate trust of people, and she always looks for the good in people, which kind of puts her at odds with the rest of the batch in this episode, as she's willing to, she doesn't know much about Asajj's background. And even when she finds out, she doesn't really care, you know, and she's, whereas the guys are more like, they're like, okay, we know who you are and what you do. And so there's that discussion there about redemption and can people change and how long does it really take for people to change? What we're recording this on Divine Mercy Sunday, so it's kind of an apropos theme to talk about, you know, redemption and mercy, and that, you know, nobody is beyond redemption if they want it. You know, what did you guys think of that as a core theme of this episode?
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And just, again, talking about Ventress's character, of her sort of redemption into where she's at. She obviously doesn't have her red lightsaber anymore.
It's that's yellow, right. Yellow.
Which I'm a big fan of the yellow ones.
Yeah.
So
I like those.
I think that sets her as a good example of what can be for the rest of the group as well. Because they're still learning, and they're on their path of no longer thinking like the soldiers they are. And they've made a lot of progress in the last 2.5 seasons. But there's still so much more to life that they still need to learn. And I think Omega is that good balance for them as well.
Yeah, I loved how she pointed out to Crosshair, I never gave up on you.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. she says, you know, people can change. It doesn't matter what she did during the war. And Crosshair's like, you're being naive. And she says, well, what about you? I never gave up on you. Yeah, that was a very powerful line.
Yeah, I mean, as a Christian example, for us, it's a good thing to remember. Never leave someone, you know, whatever past sin you may have known them in.
Mm-hmm.
There's never give up. Keep praying. That Divine Mercy chaplet works.
Oh, yeah. I love the chaplet. One of my favorite prayers ever, you know. And you know, for Crosshair, it's like, you know, he who is without sin be the first, you know, to cast a stone. He's like, you know, we can't really trust her. It's like, yeah, well, when you came back, nobody really trusted you either.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
I was cracking up
when they're looking in the binoculars. When she finally goes out on the boat,
yeah,
and they're like way out there, and Wrecker's looking through the binoculars, and Ventress looks right at them.
How did she see us? Yeah, that reminded me of from Rebels when Zeb is looking through the binoculars and Rook looks like a baby Rancor, and then like Rook like looks up at him, he's like, oh, it saw me. So like that reminded me of that.
Exactly.
Oh, Wrecker. Such an ignorant. He seems very much like the child.
Like, yeah.
He's just like, I don't get this whole Jedi stuff. How could she see me?
Yeah.
See me spying on her. Impossible.
And once again, like Wrecker said an episode back, why is there always a giant monster?
Yeah.
And there's a giant monster again. I feel like they're leaning into that. I love Star Wars monsters anyway, so I was glad to see this one. Interesting design. Yeah.
It's so funny. We went from swamp people out on the one with oh my gosh, I just lost your name.
Oh, Fennec.
Fennec, yeah. And now we got Wicked Tuna meets Star Wars.
Star Wars. Before that, we had the snow worm thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Seem to be going on a theme of monsters this.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I like how they're, you know, the Batch's first in response is, shoot it. So so they swoop in with the Marauder and, you know, Omega's like, she wants you to stop shooting at it. And they're like, no, but they do anyway. And she's able to calm the beast very much like Grogu calming the Rancor in Book of Boba Fett.
It was funny, though, to see Ventress brings up the wonderful glowing stingray.
Yeah.
And inadvertently going, oh, wait, I just brought someone else's lunch to us.
So right.
When that thing first came out of the water with its mouth full of stingray glow, it was like, okay. It's like, bring up the little fish for the big fish.
There's always a bigger fish. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, did you guys have any other thoughts about this episode? Did we miss anything?
Was she lying?
Oh, right, obviously. I raised the question at the beginning. Yeah.
I don't know.
And like she says, about which part? Is because she, you know, she gives them a lot of information. And, you know, she seems to imply that, you know, but and like as we were theorizing before, it may be the truth that Omega doesn't have like a high M count in terms of like Jedi level skills, but it would still be high enough to be of interest to the Empire.
Mm-hmm. You know? And she's got the binding agent, whatever mm-hmm. that is.
I feel like it's kind of like it must be like blood type or something. Like she has a rare blood type or something like that.
What is it? The AB, whatever it is.
Right.
Negative,
yeah.
It's the rarest.
Oh, negative. There you go. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Oh, Omega.
It reminds me of the animated Batman movie Sub-Zero. If I'm remembering the movie right, Mr. Freeze kidnaps Batgirl because she has a very rare blood type that will save his dying wife.
Oh.
Yeah. So that got me thinking of that. Well, I was like, this binder thing sounds a lot like blood type. I wonder if, but yeah. So it's like, yeah, was she lying? What is she not telling them? I feel like it's almost like every word she said was probably technically true, but I bet she left a lot out.
Yeah. 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 She seemed like she saw a lot that she didn't want to tell them.
Mm hmm.
Going to be interesting to see whatever her gain from it is going to be after she was willing to actually test Omega. There had to be some personal reason for her for that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she's going to try taking on an apprentice and she has some sort of vengeance vendetta. I still think she's a little bit bad, but
yeah,
right.
I don't know.
She'll definitely have it out for the Empire either way. You know,
yeah.
Mention earlier in the episode to the guys that like we were basically all manipulated by this war?
Yeah, we were all pawns in the same war. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, she knew she was a pawn in the war when Dooku tried to take her out because he was told to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the next episode is very different. We move on to Identity Crisis. So Force-sensitive children are being captured and handed over to the Empire across the galaxy. Meanwhile, on Tantus, work on Project Necromancer has stalled, so Hemlock approves Emery's promotion to Chief Scientist. She is given access to the secret vault, where younglings, who are treated as scientific assets, are used as specimens for experimentation. After an escape attempt by one of the kids, Emery begins to feel empathy for her young charges, but feels powerless to do anything about the situation. After Moff Tarkin contacts Hemlock to question Necromancer's financial drain on Imperial resources, Hemlock becomes more desperate to recapture Omega. So yeah, I heard someone bring up, and I'm not sure what the answer is, that is this the first episode
of the show where there has not been any one of the batch in it.
Wow. Yeah.
Probably, right?
I think so, yeah.
Because usually we've gotten at least Omega or Crosshair, you know, if it's just one of them. And yeah, this one focuses on Emery. She's the main character of this.
Yeah.
And I guess she's almost like them because, you know, she's another female Jango Fett clone.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like Omega in that sense. But yeah, I feel they're setting her up for something significant going into the finale. Definitely.
Oh, especially calling this identity crisis. It's like, yeah, there's a lot that's going on there. And then just seeing, you know, more little bits of what's inside the different rooms, like the room that Hemlock was in, with the red smoke coming out of the chamber that he closes. And early on, didn't we saw clones and one of the ex-clones, the Bourne Identity guys, being ushered into that chamber. I think that's where they were like selecting guys to be genetically altered to become those hunters.
He showed Palpatine that room too.
Yeah, right? That was part of what he showed Palpatine, yeah.
Right.
Because now we know there's more levels.
Mm-hmm. And those cylinders, they remind me of the Sparty cloning cylinders from Legends. Which were like, you can make a clone really fast in these, but they come out defective and psychotic.
All we needed was little fuzzy salamanders.
Yeah. Yeah, and Hemlock is basically Joseph Mengele. You know, the Holocaust criminal who, you know, in experimented on, you know, on prisoners. And yeah, he is definitely that kind of evil. He doesn't or like a Unit 731, which was the Japanese biological warfare division during World War II that experimented on prisoners of war and stuff. He doesn't care about people as people. He just sees them as raw materials for his scientific experiments.
Yeah, give him a number, no name.
Mm-hmm. Which goes all the way back to the clones themselves be originally just being issued numbers, you know, and that they and the Jedi give themselves, you know, names to go by. But to the Republic and then later the Empire, they're just their CT number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that this episode, like, if you're Catholic, it kind of hits you a certain way, especially with this thing about children being used as raw material for scientific experiments and called like assets and specimens, and the dehumanization of a vulnerable individual is just because of their age and at an early stage of development. It's just very unsettling and unpleasant. And
yeah,
I'm surprised they went there, basically.
Especially when you said they're more docile to the procedures. It was like, oh, it just gave me a shiver.
Yeah, you know, taking advantage of their innocence where they don't know anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Emery asked, like, why don't we get older people for this? And then you realize they've all been trained or killed at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
It makes it a little bit harder.
I love the new creature we get.
The gremlin?
There you go.
Oh, yeah. It was what's his name from Gremlins?
The cute one?
Yeah, but I'm forgetting its name. I'm blanking out. Gizmo.
Gizmo.
Yeah, it looked like Gizmo. Or as my brother called it, like what did he say? Like a rabbit, like raccoon like thing, like, and he's like a poor rabbit raccoon baby got stolen. I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, we see that probably the one bounty hunter in all of Star Wars who is not shown as having a single redeeming quality, and that is Cad Bane. is,
oh my gosh,
is kidnap helping to kidnap children for the Empire.
Yeah,
he's the been stupid doing that Aqualish for too long. Turns them in.
It's the, always an Aqualish.
Aqualish, yeah. Like, why are they always evil?
And then what does he get? His 30 pieces of silver thrown silver. At him.
Mm-hmm. He's like, here you go. Thanks for the tip. He says, and like, I heard somewhere that like the same voice actress did the voice of both the mom and the baby.
It was neat. I mean, the whole new aesthetic of that creature was awesome.
Yeah.
And then of course the classic George Lucas says it's got a rhyme. You had a lot of Grogu-esque feel to that whole story arc.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the shipping container was just like a prototype version of Grogu.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was true. Awesome.
I also liked Cad Bane's robot trying to be the nanny.
Oh, yes. Freaking Toto.
That was a fun little interaction. He's like, I can't make it stop crying. I don't know how to do
Toto,
that.
Toto, make it stop. You know, like, at once, Mr. Bane.
You know, by the way, what? I wonder whatever happens to Toto, because by Book of Boba Fett, he's not there.
He probably got trapped out of the airlock somewhere.
Yeah.
Bane's like, good riddance, more trouble than he was worth. You know, like.
Either that or his circuit's finally said enough of this. I'm going good guy.
Gonna meet AZ and they're gonna be like, we're the same.
We're best friends.
I know Omega too. Let's play. Oh, yeah.
When they go into the explaining the procedure and what exactly they're trying to do, I felt that it was interesting because I feel like they have now directly overwritten previous Legends lore. Because they say M-Count cannot be directly replicated from the source. So you can't clone Force Sensitives directly. Like, even if you clone a Force Sensitive person, their clone may or may not, and probably not, will not be Force Sensitive itself. Whereas in Legends, and this is a spoiler for the Thrawn trilogy if no one's read it, but there's two Force Sensitive clones in that I'm thinking of. There's the clone of, yeah, in the original Thrawn trilogy.
The original Thrawn trilogy, yeah, but they did mention that they can't be grown quickly.
Right.
Because if they're grown quickly with access to the Force, then they go insane.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the little fuzzy salamanders come in to block the Force so that they can grow them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, it's, I like it, how that's it's, what happened it's with subtly
the,
there. Yeah,
subtly there. Yeah. That's what happened with the Joris clone, right?
Yeah.
He was cloned, I think, did what you said, like too quickly, because he's like absolutely out of his mind, insane.
He's nuts, yeah.
Yeah, and so is the Luke clone later. Although he's more like the silent, like Jason, like serial killer.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're definitely getting the lowdown on exactly what they want to do. Like we said earlier, Omega's blood is the binder that is compatible with Force-sensitive DNA to help transfer M-Count from a donor to the clone recipient. So definitely this is, and it's called Necromancer, so it's all tied into the Rise of Skywalker and the resurrection of Palpatine in the end, mm-hmm. I think.
And it's interesting, too, because looking at Hemlock's datapad, mm-hmm. as you see his little screen after he talks to Tarkin, change from the ex-Shadow Trooper's armor that we know now to the next version of it.
Oh, yeah.
It started reminding me of the Dark Trooper robot things that took Grogu. So mm-hmm. this feels like it's along the path of, at what point in time do we stop integrating the human into it and go to just the robot? But
exactly.
Is there still some human in there like Grievous was, you know?
Right.
Take just those little bits and pieces and throw them in there.
And I feel like in Legends, it was the opposite, where the Dark Troopers started out as robots, but later on they cyborg them up with human parts. So I feel like, yeah, that thing on his monitor looked very much like Dark Trooper armor. Yeah, I caught that. That was weird. Speaking of Tarkin, okay, Tarkin has a lot of gall to be nickel and diming Hemlock over his project when Tarkin has essentially hijacked the entire Imperial economy to build his two planet-sized battle stations that he wants. You know, like, but I mean, clearly he's doing this because he wants to allocate more money to Stardust, to the Death Star program. So he's like, oh, I see you're over budget. You know, like.
Oh, yeah. And if Legends still existed, there is a third one in the, where is that? In the Kessel, Maw. New Kessel. Yeah.
The Maw. Yeah, there was the prototype. Yeah.
What I thought was interesting is, why didn't Tarkin know more about it? I feel like he's the highest non-Force user. I don't know, like, where his rank is right now, and that may be the problem.
Yeah.
It was just like, why doesn't... I feel like he should know this.
I thought he did. Wasn't he briefed by Hemlock last season?
Oh, they had that when meeting. They had that big meeting.
Yeah. Tarkin was there, so was Krennic. And a bunch of other Imperial bigwigs.
I think he just... Oh, you know what it was? It was Hemlock said he was just trying to do new things with the clones.
Right,
to try to keep using them, which we know Tarkin is like, psh, done with those things, let's move on. Mm-hmm. So, probably a lot of that.
Yeah, but it kind of... Like, I predicted kind of long ago that Hemlock would have a run-in with Tarkin because, like, Tarkin is the kind of guy where, like, as soon as you're not useful to him, he'll just get rid of you. You know, like he does with Krennic in Rogue One. You know, as soon as he can push Krennic out of the way and take credit for the whole Death Star thing, he does it. You know? So I feel like... Hemlock and Hemlock wants to leverage what he's doing to become science minister. He said it a few episodes ago, but I feel like he is. Yeah, he doesn't seem to get it that like as soon as the Empire doesn't need him, he's gone.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
Yeah. As soon as he knows too much, the Emperor will make sure he's gone.
Mm-hmm. And what is up with his hand? He has that thing where he's always, one of his hands is gloved, he's always messing with it. So I'm like, either he's traumatized there somehow, or he's got like a Luke Skywalker robotic hand, or something is going on there.
Did some testing on himself, is what
I'm
guessing.
That's what I'm thinking. Some sort of like botched human modification.
Right, like the Red Skull. He tested the super soldier serum on himself, and so, yeah. Yeah, I thought was another really interesting character moment was how when Emery is, I forget whether she's speaking to Hemlock or to when she's talking to Nala Se in prison. Emery mentions at one point she feels like she was discarded as a child.
That's what Nala Se, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, ooh, like let's learn more about that. You know, I guess that explains her empathy for the captive children. You know, and I'm like, where was she discarded? On Kamino? Like,
was she upset because she was made and then didn't have any function other than walking around with a data pad to help everyone else? I don't know.
Right, because like Hemlock kind of mentions something about rescuing her or like giving her a purpose or something like that. So I'm very
somehow
interested.
She got her doctorate.
Yeah, because he always calls her Dr. Carr. Yeah.
I don't know. Honorary
doctorate
title.
In mad science is her doctorate, is it?
And Nala Se, wow, she is down to skin and bones. She just looks, she's been definitely like starving herself the whole time to not comply.
As if Kaminoans weren't thin enough.
Right.
Yeah, we're definitely going down the road where, like, the mad scientist loses the trust of his chief assistant, you know? Because there's always the thing where Dr. Frankenstein will mistreat his assistant, and then that becomes his undoing.
Yeah, and interesting that the one little clone, or not little Jedi-ish girl, her name was Eva.
Mmm.
That's like, okay, here's Eve, the beginning. and Omega, the end.
The end, yeah.
Hmm. It's like, ooh, interesting.
Yeah, there were three children we had, the kind of primary colors. It was a pink one, a blue one, and a green one. The green one tries to escape, and they put him in solitary confinement, which is, mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, like, Eva is upset because she feels like she can't trust Emery because, you know, Emery had said that Jax, the kid who tried to escape, wouldn't get into any trouble. And so, you know, like, you have that stupid robot, which is like, you know, it is policy to put, you know, after an escape attempt, to put in confinement. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, I'm still interested to know why the Empire feels they can trust the, I get why they know they can trust the operatives, because they've brainwashed them. But why are the commandos so loyal to the Empire? I mean, except for Gregor, who defected. But yeah, for some reason, the commandos are really loyal and the Imperials. But I feel like the Empire always does this. The Empire misuses resources, and the commandos should be used for, like, you know, hit and run strikes and stuff. They're being used to guard this facility. And I feel that is an egregious waste of resources.
Yeah, better control if they keep them right there in the facility, I guess.
I mean, that's true. Yeah, they don't want them going like the Legends route where a bunch of commandos defect. But yeah, no, a very somber episode. I love how in episodes like this, they don't go into the normal upbeat credits music. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, you know, not dun 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 dun. You know, like, that would be so weird after this. Instead, you know, they go into the, you know, very somber credits music. Yeah. Anything else about this episode? Anything we missed? Things you noticed? There must have been a bunch of little things here and there. There
was a subtle little thing, because Eva said, "I like your glasses."
Hmm.
And to me, Emery's glasses has always stood out as the thing that keeps her from seeing reality. And when Eva stopped believing in her, and she's in the lab, and she's looking at the data pad, and she grabs her glasses and then just adjusts them. And I'm like, oh, take the glasses off. See the real world. You know? I was glad she, you know, got out Omega's little grass doll there and gave it to Eva.
Right. So yeah.
Nice little chink in the chain there.
Mm-hmm.
I liked seeing, I don't want to say I liked, but all of them just kept kind of saying that they just want to go home. And they were told that they aren't going to be there. Which hurt a good bit to, like, hear that these little kids crying, saying like they don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
But
it actually got me a phone call from my oldest daughter. Mom, that was so sad. I was like, I know, honey. Do you want to come home? It's like, yeah. Oh, wait, you're adulting. Never mind.
Yeah. Very good.
Emery there's going to hopefully figure out why they can't leave yet.
Right.
Adds to her a little bit more as a character of becoming caring, like Nala Say, instead of almost like a robot.
And Nala Say gave her that great empowering line of like, don't you?
Don't you? Because she's like, I don't have the power to fix any of this. And Nala says, like, don't you? Yeah. Because a lot of times we can all give excuses for why, you know, we don't change a situation when we're just like, well, it's out of my control. And it's like, well, is it really? You know, it's kind of an examination of conscience thing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, goes back to like a lot of, you know, I mean, Star Wars always draws a lot from World War II, but it goes back to like, you know, a lot of the people who are in those totalitarian countries had to make choices. You know, do you go along, or who are in the occupied countries? You know, like France, do you join the French resistance, or do you just keep your head down and go along to get along? You know, the Jews who live next door were taken away. Do you do anything about it? You know, like, so. It's just so interesting that they've gone this direction with a quote unquote kid show, you know, an animated series.
Is the second half of this season is supposed to be like the darkest and probably the most grueling of any of them that they've had so far.
Oh.
Wow.
So,
surprised you're not getting a little parental warning.
Yeah.
They have hit that on the money so far.
Mm-hmm. And definitely in our next episode, our final of tonight, which is called Point of No Return. Okay, so the Imperial operative hacks into Fee's starship and learns the location of Pabu. The Batch is preparing to leave the planet, but the operative lands in secret, destroying the Marauder and injuring Wrecker. A Venator Star Destroyer arrives with an entire division of stormtroopers who seize control of Pabu Island. The Batch's escape attempt is foiled when Hunter fails to hijack an Imperial gunship. Omega decides that the only way to save the villagers who harbored the Batch is to turn herself over to the Empire. Omega surrenders and is taken away on the operative ship. Crosshair attempts to shoot a tracking beacon onto the vessel, but misses.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy. At the end of this episode, I just quoted C-3PO. Here we go again. You know, she's captured again.
Ah, but this time, as soon as I saw Point of No Return on the screen, the first thing that went in my head was Phantom of the Opera. Past the point of no return. And oh. It was like, it's a big pivotal moment where Christine decides to let herself be captured by the Phantom so that they can capture the Phantom. And so I was like, whoa, this is what Omega did, but she did it a little more willingly than Christine does in the Phantom of the Opera. But it was amazing. So many parallels. I'm like, wow, this is really crazy. I ended up listening to Phantom of the Opera soundtrack just because it's like, why not? But yeah.
I love when they're deciding to leave. And I guess the people of Pabu have this tradition where I guess when you leave the planet, you leave something of yourself behind there in this little, you know, almost trophy room kind of place that they have. And Omega decides to leave behind her stuffy, which is a big thing for a kid to leave their stuffy behind. And also Tex goggles.
Yeah. And it was right next to the tree that she and Fee brought to the island.
Oh.
Yeah, that little ceramic tree when they had their first adventure in bargaining with bad guys. That was sweet.
It is. I'll agree with you there. It was very nice to see Tex goggles get some sort of resting place finally.
Mm.
Because we don't know what's going on with him still.
So. Right.
But at least now it's like, okay, he's in the past. As sad as that is.
Right.
Like yeah.
Putting him to rest.
Tech was awesome.
Yeah. Mm.
I hated seeing Fee's ship get infiltrated.
Yeah.
That was like, oh, she was supposed to be like, you know, the strong link in this chain of protecting them. And, you know, of course, we know who ratted out Fee. Sid.
Oh, freaking Sid. Yeah. I think that's the second time they've said they've pumped her for information.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, in the last couple episodes, like, the operative has mentioned, like, getting information out of the Trandoshan, which I assume means Sid. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one guy was right last season. Don't trust Sid.
Don't trust Sid. Nope.
Sid's making a profit off of them still.
Still, yeah.
No. Yeah, we haven't seen her at all this season. Mm-hmm. So.
But hey, maybe there's hope for her yet. Maybe she'll come to the rescue in the future. Yeah, I don't know. Just trying to be Omega-like on that thought.
Yeah. I liked when the operative lands on Pabu, Hunter's the first to sense that something is up. Which I was glad, because I really feel like we don't see enough of his super senses at work. And, you know, he kind of looks around. He notices the birds are disturbed. And he's like, something's not right. Something's off.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good to see. And then just Wrecker and Gonky having it out on the dock.
Oh, that was funny.
I don't have enough room for this stuff. I'll leave you here.
But you could tell at first Gonki was like, well, why don't we leave you here? You know, like, wait, we didn't see Gonki after that. Did he blow up with the ship?
No, because Wrecker saves Gonki first.
Oh, that's right. He grabs him and throws him into the bay. Yeah, that's yeah. right. Yeah, but the Marauder is destroyed. I'm like, Star Wars, you've got to stop blowing up cool hero ships.
Please.
Stop doing that. You know, we had the with the Razor Crest, and as cool as the Naboo Starfighter is, like, I'm sorry, Mando really needs a ship that he can, you know, have some space in. Like, the Razor Crest was cool. They blew it up, and now they have destroyed the Marauder, which was, yeah. I'm like, guys, no.
Yeah. It's like, no ship is safe, and yet somehow Palpatine returns? Come on.
I get only the Millennium Falcon has the luck to, like, survive through things that would, like, disintegrate any other ship.
You well, know, now that you said it, it's going to blow up in the next movie. I mean,
yeah,
it'll be interesting now to see how they can, one, get off the planet, and two, what kind of ride they're going to pick out.
Yeah,
that's true. Because, okay, so see, I didn't understand that. They were like, Hunter's like, I'll go for one of the gunships. And I'm like, okay, but that won't get you off the planet. Those gunships don't have hyperdrives on them. And they're not really, like, they're only, like, suborbital. Like, they can sort of come down from orbit and land on the planet, but they're not good for flying around in space. So they could escape the island in one of those, but there's no way they would get off the planet.
Yeah, but all they could do is maybe get a hold of Echo, hopefully quickly enough.
Right, yeah, if they still have their comms, which are probably not as long range as the comm they had on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, next time, probably, we've got to hijack an Imperial data terminal and get a message to Echo, because it's always finding one of those terminals that, like, are never password protected, that they always
get or easily hacked.
Or easily hacked. Or, oh, all it needs to do is scan your face. It's like, yeah, but how does that work? It does. Shouldn't it recognize Mando's face is not one that it recognized? Whatever. So, but anyway, like, Imperial, like, yeah, Imperial terminals are always ripe to be misused by good guys for stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was interesting just watching how they were all doing their different thing to go different ways. When the Imperials show up, and it's like, you have Omega, looked like she was telling Batch or something. When she was talking, right before they were like, okay, we're got to run through town. It almost looked like Omega was saying something to Batcher, or at least comforting her. And then when Batcher gets all upset because the lady who fed her a popsicle earlier was getting harassed, they just let Batcher go. And I loved how Crosshair was like, she knows what she's doing. It wasn't about leave the hound behind anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It was Batcher knows what she's doing. So Batcher's like part of the team now, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the whole, like, how are they going to escape through things, or watching Hunter take that one guy down.
Mm.
He just did quick work of him, take him out from his legs, drag him off to the side. It was too bad he didn't get the second one as easily, because then, you know, he could have gotten onto the ship.
It was funny when they were saying, when the operative was talking to his superiors and they were saying, we'll send in the division. At first, I rolled my eyes because I'm like, this is Star Wars, and Star Wars doesn't seem to know how, like, the sizes of military units work. Like, sometimes they'll say, look, a platoon, and it's like a battalion's worth of soldiers. So, like, I figured, like, they say division, but it'll probably be like a company sized force. Nope, they seem to send it. They send in a Venator Star Destroyer, and that could definitely disgorge an entire division's worth of troops. Like, they were not fooling around. They're like, we're going to send in an entire division of soldiers to occupy this island and
Also, we know it's the Bad Batch. They could easily dispatch any smaller force we might send.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they brought everybody in on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not want to let Omega go in the slightest.
No, it's neat to see Omega and Cross here have the whole conversation about we can't let these people suffer. Mm-hmm. You know, they want me. I'm going to give them me. You're going to track me. Here's how it goes. Ebony's like, well, they're going to know that you have a comm on you.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, you'll set up another, you know, a secondary tracker on the ship. But at the same time, that whole conversation, I'm thinking, she's going to have another comm on her somehow, some way. Even though they scanned her and she gave one up,
mm-hmm.
I feel like she has a secondary one on her.
Like she gave them
an obvious one to get them to stop scanning.
Right.
I don't know. Or I feel like there's just something more.
I feel like there are other ways to track people in Star Wars that they weren't scanning for, probably, because they weren't thinking of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I like...
Tracking will get better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they, because they still don't have the coordinates of Tantus. I liked that when Crosshair was saying that he's like, this plan is not viable. And Omega says to him to focus on the bigger mission and that she's only a small part of it. Yeah. I thought that was an interesting line. Because her kind of personal mission is to save the clones who are still on Tantus.
Yeah, and it's very much just a Star Wars thing in general of everybody's a small pawn in this larger picture. Like, I don't know, at least Omega is able to recognize that, and Crosshair doesn't fully seem to get it, but also I feel like he should be the one who understands it the most of completing the mission.
Right.
The overall mission.
Because he's a very mission-oriented, you know, task-focused guy. Yeah. But you can tell that his affection for Omega is kind of, you know, seeping in there, where he's like, I don't want you to get captured again.
And I felt so bad for him, because here he's like, he knows what he's got to do, he's going to tag the ship, and is ready, you know, he's ready to take that shot, and then he's got to deal with firefight coming from either side of him. So it's like, you can't say he missed because his hand was shaking in that shot.
He just straight up missed. His hand wasn't shaking, so that wasn't the problem. Like, yeah.
Yeah, he was running, trying to get there before the ship took off. It was just like, oh, see his head go down. It's like, no.
Yeah, I think it was just the distraction. And it was probably just too far, you know, to get the tracker on. If he hadn't been slowed down by those guys, he would have gotten it.
So now what's going to happen?
Ugh. Yeah, you know, if it's true that we're heading into some even darker territory now, I kind of fear what happens next.
It was really interesting as the Shadow Hunter, whatever you want to call those guys, is taking off with Omega.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's got the asset headed to base, and Omega just totally calm, takes her helmet off. She even ends up crossing her legs and sitting like Gunji taught her, and takes a deep breath and starts meditating.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so cool to hear the change in the music, and you had like a rumble, almost like the Force in the bass tone. It was awesome. Like, okay, so she's trying to just be all that she can be in this, you know. She doesn't know who she is. She's hoping. So.
Right, like a few episodes ago, what she said to Asajj Ventress, I need to know what I am.
Yeah, because she doesn't know her purpose at all for if she's a Jedi or if she's just this middleman, essentially, for binding more midichlorians.
Mm-hmm.
I still want to hear the full story on that, on how their blood is working, and just get that completed.
Mm-hmm. And what's in those pods? Because they never show us. You always see someone looking at it, and I'm like, okay, like, is it like Proto Snoke's? Like, what's in there?
Yeah. I mean, I just remember seeing them in... Was it the first episode of this season? where you see a few of the clones in their prison uniforms being marched into that area. So it's like, was that where they were trying to change them and mix them with Crosshair somehow? I still say that those crazy Bourne Identity Shadow Hunter guys are somehow spliced with some of Crosshair's DNA.
Yeah, because they're really good snipers. And yeah, and that reminds me, like, this one operative, we have seen too much of this guy for him to be kind of turn out to be a random henchman, which makes me think he's a clone we know. And my working theory is that maybe it's Cody, because Cody vanished without a trace earlier. He had that last talk with Crosshair, and then he walks off into the sunset, and he's never heard from again, but he didn't show up with Rex's rebel cell. So I'm like, where's Cody? And I hope he's not the operative, but, like, he might be, you know?
But do you think Cody wouldn't be able to resist? I think he would be able to resist. Right? It's Cody. He's got to be able to resist.
Right.
I want to know what happened to Wolf and the others.
Yeah, because I don't think...
They should have got punished or something. They just let him go? How are they still around?
That too.
But we know Wolf survives, right?
Right.
Because he's in Wolf's Rebels.
Part of Rebels. It's Wolf, Gregor, and Rex.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe those guys went AWOL also.
Well, they have to eventually, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll join in the fight. I'm just imagining a giant battle on Tantus at the end of this. Mm-hmm. And then that's where they all get recruited.
Yeah, and the last episode is called The Cavalry Has Arrived. Mm-hmm. So I wonder who, and I know that's kind of the Batch's catchphrase, but I wonder who else will show up to kind of help save the day.
That could relate back to Wolf, because he was with the Twi'leks and they rode on their horses in that episode of The Clone Wars.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they on their blurbs. That
was,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was Wolf.
Ugh, I'm going to be sweating through these next few episodes. I don't want anything bad to happen to these characters, but I know they don't show up later, so...
Hey, if I could have one future Star Wars wish, I want to be able to watch all three seasons of The Bad Batch in a movie theater.
Oh.
That would be the best.
And the animation has definitely been, like, leaps and bounds, like... They've been honing this skill, you know, to where it's just amazing. You know, it looks so much better. But yeah. Do we have any final thoughts on this, these trio of episodes or what's coming next? Or
I'm looking forward to the next episode.
Yeah. No more guesses. I just want to anticipate something really awesome. It's going to be so cool.
Yeah. It's sad that the Bad Batch is wrapping up, but it's also very exciting because, you know, like I've said before on this show, I've really appreciated it. One, because it has answered questions that I've had since Attack of the Clones. And, you know, even back then when I saw that movie in theaters, I'm like, why did the Empire ever get rid of these guys? And how did they end up being replaced by the obviously inferior stormtroopers? And this show has answered all those questions. You know, trust Dave Filoni and company. They will answer your questions.
Oh, yeah.
But that's it for us on this episode of The Secrets of Star Wars. But before we go, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons, including James H., Sam Y., Brent D., Keisha, and Michelle Q. Their generous donations help us to create The Secrets of Star Wars and all of our shows here at StarQuest, and you can join them at sqpn.com/give. And now we'd like to hear from you, our listeners. What did you think of these latest episodes of The Bad Batch? What are your theories for the upcoming, like, last few episodes, the finale? You can let us know by sending us an email at starwars@sqpn.com. You can comment on our social media pages or leave us a comment on our channel on the StarQuest Discord server. which you can find at sqpn.com/discord. Until next time, Josh Bigley, thank you for joining and me and sharing the secrets of Star Wars.
Always happy to be here.
And Catherine Laffrey, thank you as well.
Thank you. That was fun.
And once again, I'm Thomas Salerno. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Star Wars on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Find the show wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/mysterious.